Hello friends, it's me, Bethany Rutter, and I'm here with my good friend and business partner.
It's me, Alice Slater.
Back with another episode of What Page Are You On?
It's December.
We are recording this on the 1st of December. Obviously, you will not be listening until maybe like the 8th of December, but you know, we're here.
We'll be deeper into December than we are now.
But we're feeling festive. I have the world's tiniest Christmas tree. The Christmas lights are on.
We had some Stollen.
We had some mulled wine.
We saw some Christmas things.
Yeah.
It's been nice.
It's been a nice 1st of December. And here we are, recording a new episode of the esteemed literary podcast. I was about to call it a books podcast because that's what we always call it. But I'm going to go one step higher, a literary podcast.
All right, we're elevating ourselves, are we?
Yeah, we have ideas very much above our station. What page are you on? And today's episode is, I think, a really good little themed duo.
Yeah.
I can't remember whose idea it was, probably yours.
I hadn't read one of them.
So the theme of this episode is like meddling old ladies.
Love it.
Yeah. Meddlesome is the word that we would probably attribute to both of these books. And it is Notes on a Scandal by Zoe Heller and Bitter by Francesca Jacoby. We're going to begin with Notes on a Scandal. Alice, hit me.
Okay. So in a nutshell, Notes on a Scandal is about a woman in her, how old is Barbara? 60s? Early 60s?
Yeah.
She's like approaching retirement.
Yeah, exactly.
Teacher in a school, and a new colleague who she's very taken by is revealed to be having an affair with a 15-year-old pupil.
Yeah. And then it's called Notes on a Scandal because it's kind of told via the notes/diaries that Barbara, the older woman, has made throughout her friendship with Sheba, the younger woman. Both is a kind of dual timeline of her tracking her friendship with Sheba and also documenting her Sheba's affair with the student, and also their lives together, Barbara and Sheba, who are now kind of weirdly cohabiting now that Sheba has been caught and is in big trouble.
And that is like all within the first two pages, so yeah. No spoilers.
No spoilers,
now are we wrong? As far as you're concerned, banger?
Yeah. It's great.
So
yeah.
Banger.
It's a great book. I really like it. I think it's really like interesting. I was quite surprised rereading it that I wasn't like in love with it.
So, okay, when did you first read this book? Because we both had to reread it for the pod.
Yeah, I read it for the first time around when the film came out.
I think me too.
Yeah. And I didn't really remember. As I was reading it, I realised that beyond it is about a woman having a relationship with one of her students and being somehow observed by an older woman, didn't really remember any of the details.
So I remembered a lot of details, but only lots of details, not so much the greater plot.
Yeah.
But I just find the writing is so vivid. There are so many lines that just never really left me.
Yeah.
Like, even not necessarily, like, particularly, like, monumentous lines, but just, like, perfect descriptions of really small details.
Any in particular you'd care to share?
Yeah, the description of Sheba's veins on her arm, kind of poking through, like the kind of white peach of her skin, and these green veins like seaweed underneath. Gorge.
Yes.
Okay.
I also think it's quite interesting that, like, I couldn't name you another Zoe Heller book.
Yeah, I was actually having this conversation with someone, and they were like, what else has she written? And I was like, well, I can name them because I was a bookseller,
yeah,
but I haven't read them. Like, no one really, they weren't really, like, excitable. Like, no one I don't feel like they popped off.
Yeah.
There's one called The Believers, and the other one is Everything You Know. Don't know.
I couldn't, you know, if you'd offer me £1 million, I wouldn't have been able to do that.
I actually folded a page down as well, a moment in this book that made me think of Fleabag, which I know won't mean anything to you.
Alas, but I will to our darling listeners.
You'll see what I mean. Okay. So it's after this moment where she's talking about sex, and Barbara is kind of taken aback by how frank she is. It's a class characteristic, I think.
Mm.
The insouciant frankness. If I had had more contact with posh people in my life, I would probably be familiar with the style and think nothing of it. But Sheba is the only genuine upper-class person I've ever known. Her throwaway candor is exotic to me in its way. She's meant to be taking a nap at the moment, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, it's just this idea of, like, this, like, frank sexual kind of honesty is so kind of entrenched in being posh.
And also, there's a really interesting bit where Barbara goes to Sheba's house for dinner for the first time and is really struck by how messy her house is. And she feels like that's a class thing as well, that, like, she's so secure in her place in the world that it doesn't matter if someone sees that she's... she hasn't tidied up, whereas...
But then in turn, when Sheba is talking about visiting O'Connell?
Yeah.
Yeah, O'Connelly.
Connolly. Stephen Connolly is his name.
When she talks about visiting his home, and he's, like, a working class kid, she's struck by how clean it is.
Yeah.
Like, she expected that his home life to be messy and kind of unkempt, and she's really taken aback that it's, like, really clean and tidy. Even his bedroom is, like, yeah, as a pin.
Which would probably be the same of Barbara's as well.
Yeah.
So it's like reinforcing that kind of class thing. Yeah, so for all I found it, I was actually quite surprised when I read it that I feel like I really enjoyed it. And I really see why it was popular at the time and why it was, you know, filmed. And but I was, like, a little bit underwhelmed. I wasn't as, like, retrospectively impressed with it as I expected myself to be. I thought it was great. I thought it was really interesting. I thought the best stuff in it is Barbara. I think her as a character and the way she observes the world and how awful she is and how lonely she is, I think that is really, like, the best quality meat in this book.
Yeah, she's an incredible narrator.
Yeah.
I agree. I think it. The problem with it is that, you know, within the first page, you know that Sheba has an affair, you know that the affair is discovered, and you know that that they're living together, Barbara and
Sheba.
So there isn't, in terms of plot, there's not that many surprises.
Yeah.
I think the reason why it's so gripping is because Barbara is such a compelling storyteller. Especially because there's so much reading between the lines. Like, when she talks about her ex-best friend.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah,
from the first mention, you're like,
yeah.
What's going on here then? You know that there's, like, more to the story, which is quite compelling. And I think quite difficult to write in that style without kind of over-egging it a little bit.
Yeah.
And she doesn't.
No, I think the way that Barbara is written, I just really believe in her. I believe she exists.
I believe in Barbara.
I believe in Barbara. Yeah. You know, I'm sure we have discussed it, but, like, you know, the people that you meet who, like, burn through friends.
Yeah, and
it's,
like, all,
it's never their fault.
People
it's,
who can't hold down a friendship.
Yeah, people who can't hold down a friendship for more than a couple of years, if that. And it's always this kind of, like, jealousy that gets expressed in a quite, like, strange and resentful way.
And also the vibe that Barbara will always talk as though she knows best.
Mm.
She knows best for Sheba. She knew best for Jennifer. Like, this kind of very misplaced belief in her own ability to maneuver through the world, even though actually she's clearly not doing a very good job of it.
And is, like, very inexperienced in lots of things.
Mm-hmm.
Also the way that Barbara is always, in these friendships, she always exists in opposition to their romantic partner.
Yeah.
And I don't know what we are meant to take from that. But,
so I remember, and I don't know if I got this more from the film or if it was just my reading of the book, I remember having, like, I thought it was explicitly that Barbara was queer, but not kind of comfortable, not out to herself, not, like, channeling those feelings kind of appropriately, and was therefore, like, trying to have these incredibly intense relationships with her female friends. But in this reading, I mean, I haven't actually managed to finish my reread yet, so maybe it comes out more towards the end.
It's never explicit. I think it would be reasonable to read that into it. Because there's only really like one. I know you haven't got to this part in your reread, but there is a bit where she goes out on a kind of date with a male teacher from the school. And it's almost like she's only interested in it because it's something to do, not because she actually fancies him or thinks that, you know, they should have a relationship. Mm. It's like, this is a, yeah, this is just a way to spend my time when she has literally nothing else to do.
Yeah, in a way, like, that vibe does make me think of some of my favourite books of the year, like The New Me,
yeah,
like My Year of Rest and Relaxation, like, these books about women who are alone, even if they have relationships, they're not relationships that are fulfilling them in any way. And I'm very drawn to those kind of characters, like, alcoholics, loners, depressives, like, people who are dealing with obstacles that they're either aware of or not.
Mm.
And yeah, it has like a ribbon of that in there, but plot wise, obviously, it's got quite a different and distinct direction.
Yes. Yes, it does. Yeah, I really see why this was filmed in terms of the plot. I think it's a very like easy sell dramatically. It's salacious, but because it's about like an older woman and a younger guy, it maybe doesn't feel as like icky to deal with.
Yeah, I mean, because she's like in her 40s, yeah. Sheba, and the student is 15. So it also kind of brings up some stuff about, and considering that this was written in the early noughties, even the 90s, yeah, it brings up these, some of the kind of ideas of like consent and gender, and that, you know, like how this story is framed by the press, like, because she's meant to be very beautiful.
Mm.
And how the kind of press don't really take it seriously. And I don't know, I thought that was interesting because it still rings true.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought, it's interesting that I listened to this on audiobook. I didn't read it with my eyes. I read it with my ears. And, you know, we mentioned a couple of episodes ago that the audiobook I was listening to at that time was We Need to Talk About Kevin, which was another kind of big book of the noughties, which has maintained its longevity by being filmed. And I just, yeah, I feel like, obviously, Lionel Shriver is really one of the worst authors going in terms of personality and opinions and
absolute
politics.
Monster.
Absolute horrendous monster. But I just felt much more like that really delivered what I was expecting it to in a way that this semi did and semi didn't.
It's interesting you bring up We Need to Talk About Kevin, because I was going to bring it up about the other book we're going to discuss.
Yes.
But we'll put a pin in that
and pause for our next chat. But yeah, I was really happy to reread Notes on a Scandal. And it wasn't like I didn't enjoy it or didn't think it was good or didn't think people should read it, but I feel like I was waiting for something that
more.
Never came.
Because there's no, I guess the thing is, there's no kind of reveal.
Yeah.
You know?
There's only like reveals to characters in the book. There's no really reveal to the reader.
Exactly. And I guess, like, obviously it doesn't necessarily need that, but I don't know.
I want it.
Like, I still want it. I still want a little taste.
Yeah.
A little taste of the surprise.
Give me some more of your turn down corner sections.
Okay, so there was this section here, which I turned down because it's relevant to our interests. I just realized.
Is it about Baby Yoda?
I wish it was about Baby Yoda. I mean, everything in one way or another does come back to Baby Yoda. So while it's not explicitly about Baby Yoda, it's not
the subtext.
Not about
it's just like
Baby
Barbara
Yoda.
Isn't explicitly queer, but like the subtext is that she is.
Yeah.
So the subtext of this whole book is that it is actually about Baby Yoda.
Baby Yoda is definitely present because obviously time isn't actually linear. So it was actually written with Baby Yoda in mind.
Yeah, of the future. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, continue.
Where am I? Okay, so this is a scene where Barbara is shopping and she's buying like her kind of, you know, like the modest basket of.
Oh yes, I know this bit. Yeah, with a guy in the queue.
Yeah, so there's a guy in the queue in front, and he's also buying like a very solitary,
pathetic
little
amount of stuff. Yeah.
And the cashier accidentally reaches to scan Barbara's stuff with his, and he very like quickly grabs the divider to like put some distance between them to make sure it's really clear that they don't know each other. And there's this little line, Lonely people are terrible snobs about one another, I've found. They're afraid that consorting with their own kind will compound their freakishness. The time that Jennifer and I went to Paris together, we saw an airline employee at Heathrow ask two very fat people in the check-in line where they were both off to. The fat people were not a couple, as it happened, and the suggestion that they were panicked them. Leaping apart, they both shouted in unison, "We're not together." I understood their horror. And I... So that made me think of Bitter. It made me think of the friendship in that book, which we'll get to in a bit. But also this, like, linking fatness with loneliness. I was like, all right, you can back up that truck, thanks.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, it just, yeah, I don't know. It's, it's weird, isn't it? Just having to, like, kind of come to terms with just how much that is in literature and culture, and especially like the way women see the world, and like women authors write stuff.
But I don't know about you, but as a fat, if that happened to me with a stranger next to me who was also fat, it would never in 1,000 years occur to me that they were linking us because we were fat, and I wouldn't feel anything about like being connected to another person in that way. Like, I feel like that kind of happens all the time when someone asks, "Oh, sorry, are you guys together?"
Yeah. Yeah.
With
yeah,
strangers.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's that character's perception of that moment that interested me more than like maybe the author's
specific
in- well,
fact,
maybe like
yeah,
the author's intent with it. Because the author obviously has like picked that as something that would be a realistic parallel. Like
yeah,
that shock of not wanting to be associated with something as awful as fatness. Like, me with them? Fuck no. No, no, no. I'm not with them. I would never date someone like that. Like, that internalized hatred. I don't know. It's just kind of telling.
Indeed.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I just feel like, of the two books, who do you think is worse? Obviously, I think Barbara is worse.
Between who?
The protagonists of both of our books.
Should we introduce the other book?
The other book is Bitter by Francesca Jacoby. So maybe we can talk about that and then compare
yeah,
our ladies.
Compare and contrast.
So Bitter, I had actually read earlier this year. So this is one of the only times I've ever reread a book in 1 year. But I was delighted to. Because I need to come to the pod fresh. Doesn't matter if I've read it earlier in the year or I need to have read it in the last couple of weeks. So Bitter was the debut novel by Francesca Jacoby. Assume a real debut, but you never know these days.
Yeah, because so... quite often, a debut author, if the book seems incredibly assured, it's very likely that they have published under a different name before. Maybe
or they were a romance
genre.
Novelist, or they were a thriller writer, or whatever. And this is their, like, contemporary debut, mm-hmm. or their, like, literary debut, or whatever. But anyway, I've heard nothing to suggest that this was not Francesca Jacoby's genuine debut novel. And it is... the story of a lonely 52/53-year-old woman called Gilda, who has a son called Reuben, who has just got married very recently to a nice young lady called...
Alice.
Yes, the most charming name of them all. And Gilda lives on her own in a flat in sort of Swiss cottage area, and feels that her son... she doesn't have a close enough relationship with her son. She would like to have a closer relationship with him. And she feels that his new wife may be sort of taking him away from her. And that's that's how it begins. But it
yeah,
really...
I describe it as, like, it's basically a woman who becomes obsessed with her son's wife.
Yeah.
That's, like, the thriller edge.
Yeah.
To it.
Which is
but
kind
it's
of
so
not.
So much more than
yeah,
that.
It's
yeah,
not a thriller. There, It's
like
so weird.
It's paced like Carol.
Yeah.
Right? Like, even though it doesn't have anything really in common with Carol, but it has that kind of pacing of just so speedy, so tense.
Yeah.
Like, every interaction is laced with so much unspoken emotion, whether it's desperation, resentment, anger, like, even fear. Like, every single moment has, like, so much kind of
yeah,
emotional...
charge.
Ooh, so good.
So because I read this on Kindle, yeah, I didn't know that on the cover, because obviously when you read things on Kindle, especially when you read them on your phone on Kindle, you can't really see the cover.
Yeah, you don't look at it.
And I couldn't see that on the cover of Bitter, there is actually a quote from Peter Bradshaw, the Guardian film critic, that says, as gripping as Zoe Heller's Notes on the Scandal.
Interesting.
So even if we hadn't paired them up, they have been paired up. They are both set in North London. They are both about, like, an older woman kind of being obsessed with a younger woman. But I'd say in lots of ways it's kind of the opposite of Notes on a Scandal, in that if you nutshell Notes on a Scandal, you're like, ooh, exciting. And then you read it and you're like, oh, okay, I kind of knew everything that was going to happen. Whereas with Bitter, it doesn't sound that interesting, but it's so absorbing. It's just the most, like, compelling, absorbing story.
It's a quieter story.
Yeah, it's a much quieter story, but it goes much deeper and much darker, yeah. I think.
This was easily my top three of the year.
Yeah, I love
Obviously, it wasn't a 2019 release. The hardback came out last year. But it has been, yeah, easily one of my top three. I feel like Gilda, at her heart, is a nice person. She's a good person. And because you're taken back to her childhood, and you basically see everything that led up to the moment in which her son gets married, in like this kind of these little kind of checkerboarded style,
tiny chapters.
Yeah, like it was in like two or three pages per chapter. It just builds in such a satisfying way. You end up with so much pain for her, and not just for Gilda. I feel like she kind of represents this generation of women. Just everything that she goes through, every choice that she makes, it's painful to read.
Yeah, it's so sad. Because it's like, you know, I was reading it and I was just trying to figure out, like, what is her problem? And it's just that all of her responses and all of her feelings and everything that she observes, it's all just calibrated all wrong.
Yeah.
It's like she sees stuff, but she doesn't know what she's seeing, or, like, she experiences stuff. And it's just, it's all wrong. She's not malicious. She's just like, oh, and sometimes she is malicious, but I just think, yeah, she's just seeing the world through a completely inaccurate lens.
But that's why it made me think we need to talk about Kevin. Because in that book, it's a nature-nurture narrative.
Yeah,
we're trying to work
yeah.
out if the mother has caused her son to be the way that he is, or if her telling of it is accurate and that he was always different. And with this, you know, you're trying to work out, like, who's in the wrong? Like, is the son really callous and trying to push her away?
Yeah.
Did she cause the relationship, or is she a victim of it? And, you know, I feel like by the end, there is no room for, no spoilers, but there's no room for kind of questioning that. But obviously it's so much more complicated than that. It's not.
And
just
also it's like too late. Like, by the time you're an adult, like, everything, all of those kinds of, you know, actions and decisions, they're so far in the past that it is almost like it's too late. It doesn't matter whose responsibility it is, you have the relationship that you have. But yeah, just things like how her best friend, who she's been best friends with since childhood, is clearly gay, and she just doesn't know that. And she's like, you know, she lived with this woman, I thought it was strange that she had a roommate at her age.
Yeah, they even went on holiday together. They
yeah.
must have been very taken with one
yeah,
another.
Yeah, and it's just like the way she sees the world is just always wrong.
But even that, though, like, Margot says to her, if you can't talk to me, who can you talk to? And that line really, like, was painful to read, because I was like, well, Margot, you can't talk to her. You've never told her about who you are and what your life is really like. And they have this kind of strange symbiosis where they both clearly feel that the other one is lonely and needs them more than they need the other,
yeah.
you know?
But what I also thought was really sad was that, like, Gilda's had this really unhappy life, and yet she sort of looks at Margot and is like, oh, she's pathetic and ridiculous.
Which is what made me think of that bit in Notes of a Scandal, where she's like, lonely people are repulsed by one another.
Yeah.
And, like, I think that Margot makes Gilda feel better about herself. But obviously, I mean, I feel like that's completely misplaced anyway, because Margot seems great.
And has seemed like she has actually had quite a, like, full and interesting life.
Yeah, like, she went off to work during the war.
Yeah.
She's obviously had partners that, however open or not they were able to be, they were still able to live together and have, you know, a relationship.
Yeah.
They were going on holiday and, you know.
And then, yeah, Gilda just looks at her and is like, oh, pathetic
Spencer.
And lonely. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I just thought the whole book was so well realised. Like, every part of it, you know, from Gilda being a child in Hamburg all the way through, you know, her first marriage, her second marriage, and then, like, to the present day, you know, spying on her daughter-in-law working in Harrods in the 60s.
I fucking love that so much.
Yeah. I felt like every part of it, without feeling like a kind of history lesson, it felt so absorbing.
I also loved, or not so much loved, but was struck by how old Gilda is presented as, even though she's 53.
Yeah.
But she's an old lady. Like, they treat her like an old lady.
Like, incompetent and stupid.
And, yeah, like, but also just, like, quite, kind of frail as well. Like, I think if they hadn't specified her age, I would have assumed she was in her late 70s.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know if that is kind of maybe accurate for the time, that actually, you know, a 53-year-old who had grown up during the Second World War, I don't know if maybe her health would be, and also her lifestyle, like, obviously she doesn't take good care of herself.
Yeah.
So maybe her health would have led her to be more frail. But it's just the attitude of both Reuben and Alice, they very much treat her like a little old lady.
It's true. Yeah.
And she's, like, 10 years younger than my mom.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's true. I loved it. I loved it, and I found so much of it, like, so kind of moving and sad and, like, surprising. And it, what, you know, it felt really, like, perceptive, the way that there are these, you know, seemingly insignificant moments throughout your life that for whatever reason you just don't forget. And that, it, you know, you want to look back and be like, oh, yes, there was this one argument or there was this one event and that was it. But it's actually, like, a kind of weird collection of, like, little things that maybe were not important to someone else or were not important to you. And then you're like, oh, that's why things are the way they are. Yeah, it just felt so kind of perceptive. And
And yeah, I feel like as a novel, it's kind of been slept on a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, when every time I've mentioned it to someone, I've had to send them a picture of it. I don't feel like it got the buzz that it deserved. I don't remember it being on any long lists, but maybe it wasn't on my radar, so I didn't notice.
Yeah, I remember when it came out, but I didn't. And I saw people talking about it, because obviously, like, you know, I follow various other authors who are the kind of authors that would be talking about this. But yeah, I just think it's so great. And obviously she's got a lot of people on her team. On the cover it's got, like, Peter Bradshaw from The Guardian, film critic, for whatever reason. Maybe she's in film, I don't know. Michael Frayn, the author. And then there's AJ Finn.
Oh, yeah.
Scandalized author AJ Finn. Renee Knight, who wrote Disclaimer, one of my favourite thrillers of recent years. Susie Steiner, who very well-liked thriller writer.
But, like, because it's a great book, but I just feel like however commercially successful it wasn't enough and it deserves more.
Yeah. You know? I think it must be hard to pitch because it isn't really a thriller.
But it has, like, so we were saying this earlier, it reminded me of Carol in that it has the pace of a thriller.
Yeah.
Even though it's definitely not.
It's almost like, what's a psychological thriller but without the thriller? Like, it's a
What if there's no crime?
Yeah. What if psychology but no crime? And I think that's kind of what it is. It's, yeah. Yeah. What else is there like that?
I mean, for me, like, it was just in the sweet spot of people doing absurd things that you're kind of reading through, like, peeping through your fingers, like, please don't do that, please don't do that. Nope, you're doing that, and you're doing it so much worse as well. But having, like, a real momentum to it. In a way, like, Convenience Store Woman.
Yeah.
You know, like, obviously it's a very different book in every way, but still, like, just that reading of, like, someone through a completely different lens is just so compelling.
Yeah. When you were talking about, like, people doing absurd things, were you thinking about where she dresses up?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, good.
Yeah.
I was also thinking about that, because that's very wild.
I guess that's the thing, is that also a lot of the things that she does that are completely wild also don't necessarily end as explosively as they could do.
Yeah.
In a way that, because you end up caring so much about Gilda, it's a relief.
Yes, it's true. You know? Yeah, 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 yeah. It is. It does all play out in a more, like, realistic feeling and therefore quieter way. Yeah, there's a bit near the end where they're looking, she's kind of looking back on Ruben's graduation, and there's just this one line. So her ex-husband at this point gives like a speech at the dinner that they have to celebrate his graduation in Cambridge, and Gilda sort of wants to say something, but she doesn't, and she says, and I just sat there and I didn't say anything because Frank had taken all of the words. And that's kind of how she navigates through her whole relationship, which is, and I, you know, you read that and you just think, you just had to say something. You didn't have to, like, you never had to be like the best, you never had to like be the most perfect mother, you never had to be like the most charming wife or whatever. You just had to do something. And she is really someone who has gone through her whole life really without ever doing, she's like a non-participant.
She's incredibly passive, isn't she? Yeah. Like, even when she is making choices, she is still allowing someone else to actually steer the ship.
Yeah, I read that and I was like, yeah, that has been the whole
that's your problem, mate.
Yeah, like,
yeah,
it wasn't about Frank. Like, I think that's the thing. It's also like looking at it and being like, oh, it was Frank's fault for dominating or whatever, and it's like, no, like, he just did something because you were clearly not going to, and you could have done, like, there's
but
room.
Then that's why I think the title Bitter is so perfect, because I don't know about you, but I feel like you do come across that quite often in life where someone is like, well, I would have done, but someone, you know, the X and Y, they'll have like lots of reasons why they didn't do the right thing or help or whatever. And it's often, it will always be someone else's fault.
Do you know what I'm thinking of?
What are you thinking of?
Okay, I know I bring this up all the time.
Oh my God, is it anything to do with Baby Yoda?
It's nothing to do with Baby Yoda, but it's to do with your other passion, Caroline Calloway.
Oh my God, okay. This hasn't gone live on the pod yet, but I am fucking obsessed with Caroline Calloway.
Okay, well, Alice has a Caroline Calloway.
Yeah, I'm just so obsessed with it. It's like a really slow train crash. Anyway, carry on.
But this dynamic reminds me of, you know, the line, the Natalie Beach line from the article about wearing leggings under her jeans.
Yeah.
And it's like, no one told you to do that. It's the Bolu Babalola tweet. No one told you to wear leggings under your jeans. And it's like, yeah, it's the same thing. Like, you can't blame everyone else all the time. Like, there are forces at work that mean, you know, structurally, someone may, you know, like in Gilda's life story, she is at massive disadvantage because she is a woman, because she is Jewish.
She's Jewish and German.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that in her interpersonal relationship, she can just be completely, like, absent. But, yeah, she's just conspicuously absent from her own life in lots of ways. And it reminded me of that, like, Natalie Caroline dynamic, where it's like, she can blame Caroline all she wants, but in the end, she was a person too.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I do think that with Gilda, obviously she has suffered a lot of trauma, which as a character, she doesn't, as women of that generation are wont to do, she does not dwell on particularly, and kind of doesn't necessarily admit that potentially she has been traumatized by the things that have happened to her.
Yeah.
And I think that that kind of plays its part as well, that no one acknowledged the fact that she was obviously severely depressed.
Yeah, and obviously, like, part of her inability to bond with her son was clearly because she had, like, postnatal depression.
Yeah, and because she was, like, fucking 19 and
had
no idea what she was doing and had this really kind of traumatic birth scenario that everyone was just like, well, that's women's business, we won't talk about that. And it's just why I think it's so well written, because it's all there, but the character isn't aware of it, you know?
I know you haven't read this book, but one of my favourite, my real proper favourite 2019 books is Fleischman Is in Trouble by Taffy Brodasa Akner, which has a very similar element to it.
Interesting.
And I love that book. I think it's sensational. And I just think in terms of like how you are like, how you see a specific kind of female character's life and the way that that your perception of it really changes over the course of the book, I think they're both equally very like impressive and powerful.
I'll be reading that.
I think you definitely should. I really think it's, yeah. It could have been so, you know, in the way that, like, this could have been a lot psychologically lighter, and it ended up being incredibly perceptive.
Yeah.
It's very similar. Okay. It could have done a lot less and gotten away with it, but it really didn't. But yeah, I loved this book, and I'm really glad, because I remember at the time I did recommend it to you. But some, you know, there are so many books in the world, and sometimes we need...
explicitly, because I'm trying not to buy hardbacks.
Yeah.
As much as I love to be a cheerleader, I want to read everything when it comes out, and I want to be able to shout about things as early as possible. I have to be realistic about how much money I have to spend on books.
Yeah.
And, you know, when there are so many books that are published, I'd rather get two paperbacks than one hardback.
Yeah.
Unless it's something very special. So that was, it was just like, and it's the same with Fleischman Is in Trouble. It's like, I can't wait to read it, but
not right now.
Yeah. I'm just going to wait. And maybe I'll read it on Kindle.
We know, because I talk about it all the time. I read it, I did it on Audible, which was incredible.
I can't do fiction.
Stuff you haven't read before.
So yeah, exactly. I can do rereads. Like, I just listened to, as did the rest of the internet, Donna Tartt doing The Secret History, had the time of my life. But I just like being able to, like, drift in and out a little bit. I think I'm, like, gearing up to try doing some new, like, contemporary fiction on the old Audible. But I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. But any listeners who have an Audible credit to spend, you could do a lot worse than Fleischman Is in Trouble, in my opinion.
Your phone just beeped and ruined it.
It did. It was Jenny Tighe. It was Jenny Tighe.
You know, you and Jenny have made us look like absolute fools, and I hope you're proud of yourself.
I'm sorry.
You've ruined
Christmas. It was advent calendar related content. So
what advent calendar related content?
I can't tell you on there. But yeah, so I feel like this has been a real good pairing. Is there anything else you would add into this pairing?
I mean, so definitely you could go in two directions. Either the we need to talk about Kevin, because there's another aspect of Bitter that would be a spoiler that reminded me of We Need to Talk About Kevin. But then also, yeah, for me, it was just, I've said already on this pod, like, I love these narratives about women who are living in one way or another outside of the norms of society. And I feel like those tend to be about women in their 20s. And I really enjoyed reading these narratives about older women.
Agree.
And I would like to find these same narratives about a more diverse range of women as well. It's what I want to read. And I find that I just keep reading books about women in their 20s/30s who are white and generally middle class and generally American. And I would really like to be able to explore what that kind of character, that loneliness, that dysfunctionality, what it looks like elsewhere. So, you know, fun place to start. It's like the older women.
I agree. Oh my god, does that mean it's the end of the episode?
I think it's the end of the episode.
I've had a gay old time.
Me too.
Follow us on the internet. We are at What Page Pod. Various locations. You are at AliceMJSlater on twitter.com. You're still hanging in there. Smoking Tofu on Instagram.
So I am
at Bethany Rutter on Twitter and at Bethany_Rutter on Instagram.
Please, if you're in the mood, go and pre-order my anthology. It's coming out from Three of Cups Press. You can find it online. It's gonna be great. Take a little peep.
Of course it will. And obviously we never read you adverts about irrelevant stuff or generally adverts about anything, so maybe it would be nice if in exchange for that you would drop us a little rating on your podcast app of choice or tell someone how good we are, so that going into 2020 we have some new friends to chat to. But yeah,
and as always, at us with all your thoughts and opinions.
Yes, if you've read either or both books, if there's things that you think would be good little, you know, addition to this pod, we'd love to hear it. See you on the flip side.
Bye.